Deep dive into the world of science with Nature Plus. From the vastness of the distant star systems to the intricacies of infectious diseases due to climate change, we've got you covered. Enjoy access to over 55 cutting-edge journals, breaking scientific news, and over 1,000 new articles every month. Whether you're a seasoned researcher or just curious, Nature Plus simplifies complex studies. Plus, it's all available right at your fingertips on nature.com. Nature Plus, the key to unlocking the world's most significant scientific advances. Subscribe today at go.nature.com/plus.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
An experiment.
Why is light so far?
Like, it sounds so simple.
They had no idea.
But now the data speaks.
I find this not only refreshing, but at some level astounding.
Nature.
Welcome back to the Nature Podcast. This week, it's our annual festive spectacular. There'll be games.
There'll be seasonal science songs.
And we'll be highlighting some of the scientists behind this year's headlines. I'm Nick Petrichow.
And I'm Noah Baker.
So it's the end of the year, and what a year it has been. True to form, for this special episode of the Nature Podcast, we'll have something a little different for you. A bit later on, I'll be chatting to features editor Richard Van Norden about Nature's 10, our annual roundup of folks who helped shape science in 2023.
And we'll be playing 20 questions with the one and only Chamonix Bundell.
But why don't we start the show with a song?
Yes, indeed. So as I'm sure everyone with an internet connection is aware, generative AI has been a big story in 2023, and ChatGPT is arguably the most famous of all. So I felt like it's a no-brainer to include it in our festive song lineup this year. I will say that I did attempt to ask ChatGPT to write the lyrics for this song, but try as I might, I couldn't quite get it to play ball. It almost got there, but it seems that scansion, by which I mean the art of playing with rhythm and emphasis of lyrics, is not one of ChatGPT's strengths, or at least not the free version that I was using. So you'll have to settle with lyrics written by me. Let me know how I did. This is OGPT, performed and recorded by Phil Self.
How lovely are your answers, OGPT, both paid and free. You really are a charmer. The Turing test, a piece of cake. Your fluency is far from fake. OGPT, ChatGPT, a natural language jubilee. Your answers come from, with questions typed so openly. Your prose are far from humdrum. Well, at your heart, statistically, your neural nets train thoroughly. An LLM interprets thee, tokens each sequentially. Your outputs oft confuse me. Hallucinations come to thee, and what is real eludes me. Your lines of code so intertwined, your biases can be unkind. OGPT, chat Your black box is a mystery. So GPT, ChatGPT, what is it that you're thinking? Intelligence in a machine, or simply code cross-linking? A legal pain for policy, some say that we should limit the, but coding English fluency, for science there's clear utility. So GPT, what more from thee? How will the future treat you? As worries grow increasingly, will rivals outcompete you? You need to cite your evidence and give ideas of confidence. As the AI community continues to improve you.
That was OGPT, performed by Phil Self, with lyrics by me, Richard Van Norden, and our very own Nick Petrich Howe.
Speaking of me, now it's time to get excited and start cheering with our live studio audience as we've got the festive quiz.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Nature Podcast end of year special festive quiz show.
Yay!
I am your host, Sharmini Bundell, and with me I have these three guests here to test their skills and their memories. We have Nature Podcast favourites Benjamin Thompson and Nick Petrich Howe, along with special guest, top briefer of the Nature Briefing, it's Flora Graham. So welcome,
hello,
contestants.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I'm champion of champions, looking forward to continuing my streak.
Did you win last year?
Probably.
I should probably remember.
Definitely the pleasures of playing the game, for sure.
But yes, we're back with quiz time again. Quiz, very loosely defined. We're going to be looking back over some fun stories from 2023. And the quote, quiz we are doing today is in fact going to be classic fave game, 20 questions. I have here some post-it notes, which have certain stories written on them. I'm going to be attempting to stick them to your foreheads.
Okay.
If you just try not to sweat from the forehead area.
Reserve it for my armpits.
They might stay on. But the general idea is that everyone except the person whose go it is can see what the story is. That person has to ask questions. Technically, you're only supposed to give yes-no answers to questions. I might be a little lenient on this front, and I will decide the winner, but potentially somewhat arbitrarily, as is tradition.
Qualitative as well as a quantitative.
Yeah, it's vibes. Basically. It'll be based on how quickly you get it, how many questions, just general.
Whether Sharmini likes you.
Whether you're my
just
secret favourite.
Slipping her a £20 note across the desk right now.
Exactly. Festive fun, yeah. Okay, so first up, it's Benjamin Thompson.
Right, ready to go. Here we go. All
right.
So,
okay, here we go. I'm going to lean over to Sharmini.
And those luscious curls out of the way.
Okay, that's stuck to my hair. That's going to exfoliate that part of my forehead beautifully. Right, so all I can see now is a big yellow post-it note on my
right
head.
Right over his eyes.
Here we go. Is this a physics story?
No.
Animal, vegetable, and mineral. Stick to the classics.
I mean, all right. Is it an animal-based story?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you, Flora, for that one. Okay. Is it like a weird animal story?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that narrows it down, doesn't it, to something we've covered in the podcast. Is it about animal behaviour?
Yes.
Okay, good. So a behavioural animal. Is it like a crow?
Yes, getting very much warmer.
Closer, but not. Yeah. No.
Definitely getting warmer.
Okay, so
if a crow could talk, eh?
Oh, thank you. Right, okay. Here we go. So, watch me rapidly go sort of alpine-like towards the finish line here. Is it about animals that traditionally live in flocks and are very brightly coloured?
Yes.
Is it about getting these animals to communicate with each other?
I feel like you've got it. Tell us what the story is.
So I think this story is about some research in which folk got got parrots to talk to each other on like an iPad or a tablet, right?
Yes,
because
yes.
Because parrots are social creatures, and there was some worries that they were quite isolated. And so to overcome this, they had sort of play dates, right? And they could choose, I think they could choose which other parrots to talk to, and they made their own little mates and stuff like that. I think is that pretty much the story?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, and they showed signs of being sort of less lonely and isolated when they were allowed to call their friends.
That's so cute. Oh, nice.
Yeah, they could choose their little friends, couldn't they, from thumbnails and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. Okay, Flora, you're up next. I'm going to pass this post-it to Ben to try and see it.
Here we go.
The sticky is working. This is...
Good, you all right?
All right, feeling good, feeling optimistic.
Right, okay.
All right, all the science stories reported this year, which is on this post-it note? Okay.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
Okay, I feel like obligated to say, is it ChatGPT?
No.
It is not ChatGPT.
It's not ChatGPT.
Is it space?
No.
Is it physics?
No.
No.
Is it chemistry?
Yeah, kind of, but no.
I mean,
Is it about water?
No.
What is in it? But well,
not
no.
About
it's not about water.
It's something that's
no.
much better than water.
Oh my! Ooh,
that is a good clue. Actually,
is it about booze?
No,
no. But you're on the right sort of line.
So on the right line.
What's the opposite of booze?
What is the opposite?
No, ignore that. That is someone.
Breast milk. I want to
say. No, no. Make us lead you down the garden path.
It's
awesome.
It's
about a liquid.
It's about a liquid. Yes. Yeah.
An imbibable liquid.
An imbibable liquid.
Good
like
use of
a
imbibable.
Delicious coffee.
Yes.
We're talking about our experience of coffee.
I mean, I'm telling my experience right now. I've had two cups of coffee this morning before recording, and I am absolutely blazing.
Yeah. Okay. So, coffee affects our feeling of being awake.
Yeah.
But eventually, it is going to come back and bite you on.
Yes.
Bite
you on the
coffee will. I'm not trying to think of a family friendly.
Bite
you on the Christmas pudding. because it might do something to your brain receptors in order to kind of fend off the causes of tiredness, but eventually. It will hit you later.
Factor that in.
The debt must be paid. Yes. I remember the story very well.
Wonderful. And finally, for round one, we have Nick Petridge Howe.
Right, here we go. Gotcha.
I wasn't sure you don't remember this one.
I think because the video was... Sorry, I'm giving my clues now.
Video.
Well,
very memorable?
Yeah, you're right. There was a very memorable video.
Okay.
And now I'm dropping too many clues, but I'll reminisce warmly about the video after you get it.
Is it animal story?
Mm-mm. No.
No. Space?
No.
No.
Physics?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Chemistry?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably a chemistry story, yeah.
Is it about a chemical reaction then?
Not really, no.
But there's definitely something happening to a material?
Is it about something that needs to be hard, but not like...
Yeah.
Floppy.
Yes, hardness and floppiness, definitely.
I don't think it's what you're thinking.
No, it's not the difference between toughness and hardness, that kind of stuff. It's not one of those, no.
Floppiness and hardness are both present in this story.
Because I'm thinking about a story we did about like hydrogels and stuff like that. It's not a hydrogel story.
We love a hydrogel, but not this one.
Not this one.
Shall I drop my clue?
Yeah, drop a big clue.
Right, I'm going to give you a clue, and it's a movie reference, Nick. And the movie and the reference is Get Out.
Oh.
Does not help me in the slightest.
When you said movie reference, I was like, oh, I know what movie it is.
Movie?
But now I...
No, when you know, you know.
So I can think of a really relevant movie.
I was thinking of a very different movie.
I'm thinking of I'll Be Back.
Okay, this is absolutely bamboozled
me. I was thinking of even a third movie.
Wait, what's yours, Flora?
I was thinking of the Lego movie.
The Lego Movie, Terminator, Get Out. What is this story?
Terminator 2 and the Lego Movie are specific to this story.
What's the main
Poor Nick, this is cruel.
Yeah.
I know you've seen this movie. I've seen this movie a bunch of times, right?
But what is this story?
If you wanted to make one of the characters from Terminator 2, what would you have to be able to do? Because one of the characters...
Oh, is it about a robot arm?
Nope. What's the other?
Terminator 2, not Terminator 1.
Yeah, but it's got the robot arm descending into lava. Oh, you know, that's quite a classic scene.
That's true, yeah.
Like what's,
that is relevant,
when,
isn't
you,
it?
When you think about special effects like and movies in the 90s, like what's the what? Then when you think of that movie, what was the big thing, Nick?
This is becoming a Terminator-based podcast quiz.
What was the big thing in Terminator 2?
Yeah. T-1000.
The new guy.
Oh, is it about liquid metal?
Yes.
Ben looks so done.
I don't think I did this story.
Oh, you did. You did. It was me and you.
Maybe this was your day. This is one of yours.
I'm so bamboozled by all the movie references. I've got no idea what this story is. It's about liquid metal.
You've got liquid metal doing a little Terminator 2 robot sort of forming.
Oh, my goodness. I do remember this.
Can I try and remember how I remember this story?
So
some researchers made a material out of, I think, gallium, the metal gallium. Yes.
Well, that Nick's head does say gallium on it.
Well, so. I'm impressed. I'm retracting my breath.
And they made like a little Lego figure out of it, which is solid. And I think if you play with it with magnets, they could get it to turn into a liquid, through some bars, take the magnets away, and it reformed back into the little Lego figure.
Yes,
shape.
I did do this.
It's Terminator 2.
Which is, in many cases, the plot of Terminator 2.
I do remember that story. Ben is entirely right. When he said it, I was like, oh, yeah, I did talk about that. I remember saying those words. Never mind.
Okay, final round. Chance to redeem yourself or maintain your success, as the case may be.
Okay, here we go.
Ooh, let's do it.
I feel warmed up now.
Yeah, that was a little bit of practice.
That was breaking the ice.
Yeah, getting
I'm in the icy pond now, screaming for help.
Okay, we're back to Benjamin Thompson.
Okay. Ooh, is this a story about a movie in the Terminator franchise? Of which there are only two movies, it has to be said. don't email me, listeners. right, okay, so is it about something in outer space?
Nope. No.
Oh, I don't know about
anything. Family on planet Earth.
Okay, firmly on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Is it about climate?
Nope.
Nope.
No. Is it about something that humans do?
Yes.
Okay, right. That can narrow it down. Significantly.
All of human enterprise.
Is it about something that I would do?
Maybe.
No, that's not
I think it's about something we all do.
We all do.
Whether we know, whether we realise it or not.
In our field, maybe.
Yeah, it is relevant to our jobs.
Oh, usually. Is it about, it is. Well, is it about talking?
No.
Darn. Is it about reading?
More sort of something journalists do, I would say, rather than like us.
Is it about fact-checking?
No.
No, but you're in the right sort of lines, I would say.
It's definitely about online journalism specifically.
Yeah. Yes. And how you might get people to your story.
Is it about crafting a headline?
Ooh,
yes.
Okay. I honestly have got absolutely no idea.
I have only the foggiest memories.
So presumably it's about the choice of words in a headline and what people.
Yes, you're doing
very well for someone who doesn't know what this story is.
And the sorts of emotions that people
ascribe.
Like, what are the emotive words that make people want to?
Absolutely.
Is it about whether positive or negative headlines?
Yes, absolutely.
Get more clicks, and I'm guessing. Probably the answer is probably negative headlines.
Negative
more clicks than positive headlines.
That's,
is that the story?
That's actually the story. Yeah. You just worked that out.
That's incredible.
I actually figured that out, listeners. Like, I wow.
I mean,
Crikey.
I will continue to play, but that is a
serve. Researchers looked into which headlines get more clicks. And the sort of headline fact here was people scrolling online news are 1% less likely to click on an article for each positive word in its title.
That's why we're going to call this festive quiz How Ben Loses the Festive Quiz.
Ben talks about Terminator 2, the podcast. That ain't going to
get quite angry about Terminator 2.
Amazing. Well, right, let's swiftly move on to Flora Graham.
I cannot wait.
Uh-huh. Oh, nice story. Nice story. This one.
Okay, is it ChatGPT?
No, it's not.
Is it space?
Yes,
it is.
Ooh, yay, I love space. All right. Is it something to do with exoplanets?
No.
Black holes?
Nope.
Closer to home. Ooh, the moon.
It is the moon.
Are we landing things on the moon?
Yes. Maybe that was a massive clue.
Ooh, it's been such an exciting year for things being landed on the moon.
Yep.
Actually, we're really spoiled for choice. Are we India landing on the moon?
We absolutely are. Yes.
Well, I was like, who successfully. It's hard. Anything on the moon is hard. I'm not dissing anybody. I'm saying good effort to all.
Right, land on the moon is super hard, but yeah, India successfully.
Oh, and what an impressive accomplishment. I think there were so many aspects of this that people loved. I know that the photo of scientists wearing saris and traditional dress became a real talking point, and how great it was to see scientists in their traditional dress, and how, you know, how meaningful it can be to show scientists like expressing their culture and, you know, just breaking apart some of those stereotypes. Another aspect was the fact that I loved how India, like the kind of mission leaders, they were saying, like, how did you do this on this incredible shoestring budget? Can you, you know, can you, is this wisdom that you can kind of share with other nations? And he was just like, look, you know, we are just so good at this. And then we're like, nobody is ever going to, you know, you just can't understand what India can do with the resources that we have. Mm. And it was just so impressive to see people, you know, they put their mind to it, their budget. It was a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what other missions have been, and they accomplished it. And I think it was just, yeah, such a source of pride.
Fourth country to land on the moon. Mm-hmm. Well, it says to perform a controlled landing.
So yes, that word control is important.
Not crashing on the moon.
And first to land near the moon's south pole.
Mm. Yeah, so we've got lots of exciting science coming up from the south pole that we, you know, all new stuff already being released. So,
and more in January, I think, you know, Japan are looking to land a controlled land on the moon in January.
Hear more on the Nature Podcast in 2024.
Listen up, listeners.
Finally, right, we've got time for one more. Well done, Flora. Okay. We've got Nick Petrichow with the final question here.
Okay.
All right, everyone have a look.
Okay. Knowing Charmony, is this animal related?
Yeah, well,
gosh darn it.
Is.
Okay.
Straight there.
Sasha doesn't know it. It's about octopuses.
Not this time.
No. Not this time. Okay.
Is possibly some level of water involved.
Yeah.
What, some level of water involved? I mean, that's quite a lot of things.
Yeah, like, I know. I'm trying not to make it too easy.
It's not like dolphins or whales or anything like that.
No. Not that a much sort water. Of purely.
Yes.
Some
sea
water.
Based.
Yeah, no.
Some not
no flipper
animals. A combination.
No blowholes.
A land animal that spends time in water.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Does it have anything to do with a drug dealer?
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to go to the movies again. Really torture Nick.
What does.
Have
what
you seen the
you?
Television series Narcos, Nick?
I may have done, yes. So Pablo Escobar, the sort of infamous drug lord in Colombia, had some hippos because, you know, you've got that much drug money, what else are you going to do with your time? And they sort of got out and have been breeding in the wild, and it's a massive, massive problem. So there have been various ways that the Colombian government have been trying to deal with this, whether they're going to euthanize some of them, whether they're going to ship them to different places. We actually did a few stories on this this year, so I don't know exactly of the stories
really
about cocaine
thing.
Hippos.
Yeah, it's quite controversial as well, isn't it? What to do
it's
with them?
Very
they're trying
controversial.
To sterilize them, but
trying to save them,
that's expensive.
Trying to send
I mean,
them.
There's quite the kind of disagreement and controversy going on between people who are saying, look, these hippos don't belong here. They're very damaging to the ecosystem. They're just not part of, you know, they're really like smashing up the habitats and things like that. So, you know, as much as hippos are inherently kind of funny and adorable, their impact is, you know, not negligible. But people are kind of, you know, understandably like, don't go kill all the hippos.
No.
So
yeah,
it is a tricky one. I mean, it's I think you see this with like the feral horses in Australia. You see this in a lot of cases where sometimes an animal that is doing a lot of harm is also super beloved and slash adorable. So yeah, I think we could just maybe educate the hippos that in abstinence.
Poor Graham has some solutions to the world's problems here, don't worry. We in the Nature Podcast are all over it. We're going to be back solving more of these fun kind of problems next year. But for now, that is the end of the end of year festive quiz / game of 20 questions. Congratulations to my three contestants.
Hey.
I'm gonna, Nick's gonna be upset at me, but I am gonna award the prize to Flora.
Wow,
Nick's gonna
field.
Be upset. Wow, okay, all right.
I mean, I can't defend my choice, but congratulations, Flora.
I'll take it.
Nobody asked me how I came to that.
Here's me handing over the big metaphorical wrestling belt to you for next year.
Listeners at home, how good is your memory? Let us know. Email us, tweet us whether you got any of those questions before our competitors here in the studio. And as usual, we will link to all of these stories and videos and various things
in the show notes. But yes, thank you so much for taking part, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Happy sources. Hey.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I'll be back.
That's a better one.
Nice.
I have to say, having worked with you for as long as I have, Nick, I'm not sure why it was a surprise to hear so many Terminator 2 references, but somehow it still was when I heard it.
Well, it took me by surprise as well, because I wasn't sure Ben's reference was a Terminator 2 reference, thus my confusion. I still think I won this quiz, but never mind.
Always some sore losers at the Nature Podcast. Anyway, in a screeching tonal U-turn, let's move on to our next song. As much fun as we've been having through this year, both in quizzes and otherwise, the planet has not been faring so well. Just a few weeks ago, 2023 was declared the hottest year ever recorded, and scientists are already predicting that the 1.5 degree target set in Paris in 2015 may be out of reach. And with worsening impacts of climate change being felt all over the world every day, the urgency for action is growing ever greater. So with that in mind, here is Warming Night, written by me with help from Brendan Marr, and again performed and recorded by Phil Self.
Silent night, warming night, climate change, words seem trite, the hottest year since records began. Hopes for change going down the pan. Desperation for thee in 2023. Melting ice, planet's plight, scientists quake at the sight of corals bleaching faster again. Impacts get so hard to constrain. Forests fade, earth is bare. World leaders stand and stare. Silence might serve to you. Folks who think that time's not tight, but modeling says we must act right away. No time to lose, the time is today. Silence might keep hope alive.
finally, on our festive spectacular, it's time for a little bit of reflection of the year that's just gone by. And the way we like to do that on the Nature Podcast is talk about Nature's 10. This is an article that highlights 10 people who shaped science in the past year. And joining me to do so is features editor Richard Van Norden. Richard, hi.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've had some mulled wine, so I'm very much in the mood for some festive reflection. So I wanted to talk to you today about Nature's 10. Now, we probably won't have time to talk about all of them in detail, but first of all, I wanted to talk to you about Kalpana Kalahasti. And so she was part of the team that helped put India on the moon this year.
This was a really memorable moment for India. In fact, only the Soviet Union, the United States and China have ever put equipment on the moon, but India became the fourth country to achieve the feat this year. And Kalpana Kalahasti was part of the team at ISRO, the Indian Space Research Organization, that did this. And what made this really special for them was that she was also part of the team in 2019 when an effort to land on the moon failed.
It's interesting as well because the Chandrayaan-3 mission was kind of built on the failure of the previous mission.
Exactly. And they actually had a massive challenge, was that they didn't have a bigger budget. The budget had to be the same as the one before, about $70 to $80 million. They didn't have any more mass that they could work with. So they basically couldn't redesign a failed lander, and they couldn't really build in many redundancies in case something failed. So Kalahasti had to work to sort of reconfigure the orbiter and lander of the previous mission. They actually cut down the mass of the orbiter to have more fuel and stronger legs and various other improvements without actually spending more money than the previous mission.
And that's quite an accomplishment as well, because this year saw quite a few attempts at landing on the moon, and India, you know, really shone in this respect.
Yeah, this year, Japan, well, a Japanese company called iSpace, they crashed. A Russian attempt to land on the moon crashed, and there have been other moon missions that have crashed. So it really is very difficult to do. And although the whole mission was live for about 2 weeks on the moon, it did achieve quite a lot. Had a lander and a rover. It measured a moonquake, and it measured the surprisingly sparse density of the moon's ionosphere, which could mean that communications from the moon might be a little bit easier than we thought. Looked at the moon's soil, and this was in the south pole of the moon, which is a bit harder to land on than other areas. And it's really reignited confidence in India's space agency, perhaps investment in Indian research. And Kalahasti says, apart from all the technical success, she hopes that young professionals across India and the world get inspired by how the team recovered from their failure.
No, it's certainly an inspiring story. And going from one incredible achievement in science to another, Katsuhiko Hayashi, he was part of the team that created viable eggs from the cells of male mice.
Well, yeah, not only viable eggs, they actually created live mouse pups, young mice, from the cells of two male parents. And they did that by making eggs from male mice cells. So the implication, but this is a very long way away, is, you know, could it be possible to have all male births, essentially? Can you make viable eggs from two fathers? And that's what he achieved in mice.
And, you know, this is an achievement that many researchers actually thought was impossible.
Yeah. So Hayashi has worked for a long time on this. Previously, he got mouse stem cells into becoming eggs and fertilizing them, producing live pups. And this time, what he did was he got the cells from male mice to produce those eggs. He said, actually, it's not that difficult, when we asked him, but it sounds quite difficult to me. What they actually did was they took cells from the tails of male mice, and these cells have both X and Y chromosomes in them, like our cells, and they reprogrammed them into stem cells, and you can use genetic or chemical methods to do that. And in that process, some of the cells spontaneously lose their Y chromosomes, they isolate them, then they use another chemical that causes some errors of cell division, and they ended up with some cells that have two X chromosomes, effectively female, and then they create an egg from there, and so on. Now, after all this, they've got to fertilize the eggs, they've got to transplant the embryos into female mice, and after hundreds of embryo transfers, they only got seven live pups, young mice born, but still an incredible feat.
An incredible feat, and as you sort of alluded to, one that could potentially be very beneficial, because this could be used to help species that may be on the brink of extinction, right?
Yeah, so they are apparently turning their attention now to the northern white rhinoceros, one of the most endangered species in the world. There are only two known northern white rhinos alive today, both female, and they're hoping their techniques could be a way to save that lineage. But growing rhino sperm and eggs in the lab is going to be much more difficult than working with mice. And as for human reproductive cells, I mean, this could be decades away, but, you know, his lab is leading in the idea of making germline cells, eggs and sperm, from somatic cells. And you, conceivably, we could be talking about new ways to create babies from people who are infertile or from two men or something like that. So incredible science. And he's very clear that, you know, the ethical points around this is really not for him to pronounce on, that society needs to make these decisions on whether to use these kinds of eggs that he's made, not scientists.
And speaking of society, the next person I wanted to talk to you about has been working on perhaps a way, maybe in the future, of producing a lot of energy, which I think is something that we're quite interested in as a society. And I'm talking here about Annie Critchlow.
Yeah, so I'm sure our listeners have heard of this, but this is the National Ignition Facility in the United States, which last year, in fact, was the first to produce more fusion energy than went into the nuclear fusion attempt. There's a huge caveat on that. So this is done with about 192 laser beams, and they are firing onto a frozen pellet of deuterium and tritium. These are isotopes of hydrogen. And this pulse of energy generates really high temperatures, 3 million degrees Celsius, and they actually fuse into helium. And that fusion releases energy, and more energy came out of the fusion than came onto the pellet. But way, 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 way more energy was used to fire up the laser beams and went into the whole apparatus in the first place. So we're not getting more energy out yet than in. But we did get more energy out than went into the pellet. So there really was a fusion reaction there. It's the same kind of reaction that happens inside stars, inside hydrogen bombs. And, you know, this was a really exciting announcement. So why this year? Well, Annie Critchlow, who leads on the design of this kind of stuff, this year they showed that this was reliable and reproducible. So they've done quite a lot of shots. They've got 4 successful runs out of the last 6 shots. Next year they want to get even higher yields, even more energy out than in.
It is something, though, that always feels like it's maybe a decade off. But this work that Critchlow has done has really helped sort of, I guess, revitalise hope that this could be a viable source of energy.
Yeah, I mean, we should say that the National Ignition Facility really exists to bolster nuclear weapons science. It's supposed to help the United States reliably test its thermonuclear weapons without actually detonating them for real. But nonetheless, this has ignited a lot of interest in laser fusion, and there are now private companies that are hoping to demonstrate that this is going to work. Now, practically speaking, you're going to need to have lots of lasers firing, and then after each shot you somehow have to recharge the lasers and refresh the pellet and do that lots of times. So this might not actually be the most practical route to fusion, and our listeners might have heard of other routes like the ITER test project, the fusion reactor in France, which is using powerful magnetic fields to try and compress and contain a very high temperature plasma. And maybe that's the way to go, and there are other private firms that are trying out smaller versions of that with improvements in technology. So I'm still not sure myself that firing lots of lasers is going to be better than using powerful magnetic fields. However, all that said, the wave of enthusiasm over this project, it is the first one that's shown more energy out than in, despite the caveat on that. Now, Critchlow herself says, you know, it's not a question of if, but when fusion energy arrives. So she is very optimistic.
But going from optimism to maybe a slightly different place here, I wanted to talk to you about James Hamlin. And so he has worked on superconductivity, but you haven't highlighted him this year for his research, really, but more for some sort of sleuthing he's been doing.
Yeah, he poured cold water on some sensational claims of superconductivity at room temperature. So this was very exciting when it was announced, a material that can conduct electrical current with no resistance and that works at room temperature, because all the ones we know, you have to cool them down or put them under pressure This one had to be under kind of moderate pressure, but it was claimed to work at room temperature, and it was published in Nature. So a lot of attention on this. But lots of physicists were immediately very doubtful. One reason was that Ranga Dias, the physicist behind this discovery, he'd actually had previous papers retracted. One of those had been in Nature as well. So already there was skepticism. But what James Hamlin had done is he, with another physicist, Brad Ramshaw, sort of pointed out a series of concerns about this research and sent them to Nature. And behind the scenes, they essentially went back and forth with the editors and with Dias to try and figure out whether the measurements, the data, were solid. And essentially, Hamlin's saying they just never got a straight answer to this question. And in the end, 8 of 11 authors of this paper asked for it to be retracted, and it was, barely half a year after it was published. But Hamlin really put a lot of energy into digging into and deconstructing and calling out this claim. In fact, it's not the only claim he's called out of Dias's. He's also found plagiarism in Dias's thesis. He's found other problems with Dias's work. He's sort of become a sleuth, probably a role he wasn't expected to take on, but one that should really be praised.
No, and by the sounds of it in this article as well, he's never really been a stranger to questioning results. Right from the beginning of his sort of scientific career, like, he had this sort of critical analysis ideal inputted into him.
Yeah, yeah, he tells this story of being very excited to find superconductivity and his advisors saying, well, do some more measurements, and the signal disappears, and that kind of taught him how skeptical you have to be in this field, which is a field that's very tricky to take measurements. You can easily fool yourself with the delicate equipment needed. I mean, there's a lot of other sleuths actually went into calling out Dias, and in fact, Hamlin was sort of first put onto this by George Hirsch, another physicist, who 3 years ago in an older paper thought he saw a problem with Dias's paper, and he actually pointed out it was quite similar to a paper that Hamlin himself had co-authored, and Hamlin dug into his own work and found evidence that another person had manipulated data for it. That was retracted. So this all sort of got Hamlin going on this skeptical track, and there are other researchers who helped to call out this problem. But we chose Hamlin in part for his work behind the scenes with Nature's editors to get the paper retracted.
And as you sort of mentioned as well, like, he isn't a full-time sleuth, he is a superconductivity researcher as well.
Yeah, he wants to get back to his own research next year. He said superconductivity is still the topic in physics that he finds most exciting. And there is actually a revival of interest in this field, which is fascinating. He said the BS of human beings is much less interesting to discover than the mysteries of nature.
Well, maybe on the kind of topic of BS, I wanted to talk to you about something this year that maybe is a producer of such some BS sometimes, and that is ChatGPT. And before we get into this one, I just wanted to ask as well, like, normally Nature's 10 is the 10 people who help shape science this year, and actually there's 11 things on here, and one of them is not a person, it's ChatGPT. So what's happened here?
Right, yeah. Well, ChatGPT, obviously a computer program, not a person, has had such a huge influence on science, and let's be honest, is also often anthropomorphized. Its output appears to be human, but obviously isn't. And so there was a movement from some people to add it to Nature's 10. But of course, Nature's 10 is the stories of people. So we decided to put it in as an unprecedented 11th non-person for this year, basically because of its extremely profound and wide-ranging effect on science and on society in the past year. And that's not to say either that specifically ChatGPT is going to be, you know, the program that scientists are going to be using. There are so many competitors, and generative AI keeps on building. But it's really the poster child. It's the one, it got released, it catalyzed widespread interest in this. We've done surveys of thousands of scientists. Lots of them are using it. And even if they're not using it, they're incredibly interested in it and are building on it in different ways to change how science is done. So we thought that was just a signature moment for 2023 that really had to be commemorated in this list. Now, I should say we also are profiling Ilya Sutskever, the chief scientist of OpenAI, who played such a big part in developing ChatGPT, and his human story is one of Nature's 10. But we've also picked ChatGPT as a non-human 11th.
And as I mentioned as well, ChatGPT is incredibly useful, but also it can sort of hallucinate, it can invent things, it can make stuff up. So you know, where do you see the role of ChatGPT in science? Is it benefit? Is it danger? Is it both? And how do we go forward with ChatGPT?
Yeah, it's definitely two-edged. On the one hand, I think generative AI is going to be a benefit for science. The idea just of training these large neural nets, whether it be on language or on scientific data, getting them to encode the structure of all this data and to be able to generate fresh versions of it or to be further trained to learn patterns in the data. Effectively, that's what ChatGPT is doing for language. That's incredibly powerful, and it could help scientists make all kinds of new discoveries. And we already see papers coming out this year about generative AI being used in material science and chemistry and biology. So many ways to brainstorm and guide scientific research. Perhaps we could be seeing designing of new molecules or simulating the behavior of cells. But this is all saying, you know, if it's used carefully and transparently and not used for bad things. And unfortunately, it's a double-edged sword. And we also see ChatGPT being used, well, in science anyway, to fake research papers, to produce fundamentally unreliable content. Everything has to be verified and checked because the computer program is merely generating likely text rather than sort of thinking about it. And so there's a good and a bad to all of this.
A worthy list indeed. And as I say, listeners, go check out the show notes for a link to the full article where you can read about everyone and everything in Nature's 10 this year. But for now, thank you so much for joining me, Richard.
Thanks, Nick.
And that's it for this edition of the show and our last regular podcast of 2023.
But never fear, we still have some more special content coming up. Keep your eye out for a very special documentary all about the AI black box, which will be appearing in your feed very soon.
Along with our annual clip show, highlighting some of the podcast team's favourite stories of the year, and one final long read, all about burgeoning solar tech.
Finally, before we go, we wanted to thank you so much for listening over the past 12 months.
Yes, indeed. It's been a bumper year for science, and we're so happy that you've joined us to explore it. Here's to 2024. I've been Noah Baker.
And I've been Nick Petrichow. Happy holidays.
Deep dive into the world of science with Nature Plus. From the vastness of the distant star systems to the intricacies of infectious diseases due to climate change, we've got you covered. Enjoy access to over 55 cutting-edge journals, breaking scientific news, and over 1,000 new articles every month. Whether you're a seasoned researcher or just curious, Nature Plus simplifies complex studies. Plus, it's all available right at your fingertips on nature.com. Nature Plus, the key to unlocking the world's most significant scientific advances. Subscribe today at go.nature.com/plus.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.